Welcome to the College Football Bros, the podcast that knew Alabama would be good this year. And now, here are your hosts, Michael, Ryan, and Trey Newman.
Welcome to the College Football Bros podcast. I am Michael Newman, and I'm joined by the brother who's as smooth as Devontae Smith.
Oh, that is so me, Ryan Newman.
And by the other brother who's as thick as Najee Harris.
With two C's, Trey Newman.
All right. On today's episode, we are going to recap, of course, the national championship, Alabama's dominating victory over Ohio State. We're going to discuss the 2020 Alabama's team, their place in history, along with some of the cast of characters, Nick Saban, Devontae Smith, where they stack up with those before them. We're also going to discuss Jim Harbaugh's contract extension at Michigan, Boise State's hire of Andy Avalos. Also, be sure to follow us on social media at CFB Bros. Subscribe on YouTube for additional episodes. And subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/collegefootballbros. We've got tons of bonus episodes up there, including one that is we're going to be releasing. It's probably already out as you're listening to this. We looked ahead to the 2021 season. We talked about the players, coaches, teams, and storylines that we're most looking forward to in 2021. So check all of that out. But let's get to the game. Let's get to Alabama beating Ohio State 52-24. Trey, what'd you see here?
Yeah, I mean, Alabama was head and shoulders the clear better team, and they were really going to win no matter what. I mean, they were superior. It was really an offensive clinic, much of what we had seen the whole season. Ohio State, in order for them to have any chance, they needed everything to go perfect and even have Bama screw up. Obviously, that didn't happen. In fact, Ohio State had a few guys out due to COVID. Trey Sermon got knocked out really early in the first quarter, which obviously hurt. Sean Wade in the secondary looked like it had most of the rest of the year kind of outside of that Clemson game. The game ended up being boring, but it's hard not to sit back and watch that Bama offense and not enjoy it. I mean, it's just insane how good of a night they had and then how good of a season they had when you put it all together. Like, it was funny watching Devontae Smith. He was setting records in the first half of that game. You know, I'm not saying it's easy to slow him down, but Ohio State didn't do anything to slow him down. It seemed like every time he caught it, he had like 5 yards of space of separation. It was wild. So what else did you guys kind of take away from this?
Well, you know, I obviously you touched on Bama's offense going up against Ohio State's defense, but going on the flip side, I thought Bama's defense, they stepped up here. They, ever since that midseason, you know, game, well, kind of early in the season, I guess, against Ole Miss, I mean, they turned it up and they were a different defense. I mean, Florida, of course, put up some numbers on them, but Florida had an elite offense, of course, and they made it they made that game as difficult as could be for Florida. But in this one, I mean, the Ohio State's a really good offense, a very, very good offense. We just saw what they did to Clemson. I mean, they just made them look like chumps. And, you know, they had Olave, they had Garrett Wilson, they still had Justin Fields. I mean, that, and a really good offensive line. So Bama just had their way. Christian Barmore was a beast on the defensive line. He was really, really tough to handle. Like a sack and a couple of tackles for loss, and I think he forced a couple of penalties. The secondary was good. Brian Branch had three passes deflected, and Sertan had one, so the secondary was playing well. Dylan Moses and Christian Harris were good on the kind of the middle of that D. So, you know, they were stepping up, and I don't think Ohio State's offense was maybe as bad as it. Well, I mean, it's not bad at all, but I don't think they. I think they were better than they played in my eyes for sure. They got down to 35-17. It's just so hard to keep up. Like, you just kind of get away from who you are when you have to go up against like a juggernaut. If they were going up against a somewhat below average or somewhat less potent offense, they would have been able to move the ball a lot better because they could have stuck to their game plan and things just kind of got away from them. But that just shows you how good Bama is, that Ohio State just dominated Clemson, yet they couldn't keep up.
Yeah, Bama's defense did show up in this game for sure. Like, Fields, I definitely wouldn't say he was bad. This game was definitely not lost because of him. He missed a couple throws, but he also had some great throws, some great touchdown passes. So, well, one great touchdown pass. But I think what I was most impressed with in this game was Steve Sarkisian, maybe. I mean, obviously he's got all that talent to work with, but like you said, like they know Devontae Smith is getting the ball. Ohio State knew it. Everyone in the stadium knew it because they were going to him every time in that first half. And he's just, he puts them in different spots. Like that one play, that touchdown pass where they set Devontae Smith in motion and you can see the DB assigned to him. They're just kind of like, you know, going back and forth. And right when the ball snaps, he's done. Like Devontae Smith is free. So it's, I guess, easier said than done. You could try and double him, but
I like the play where he was being set in motion. Was that the one you're talking about? He's being set in motion.
And then he turned on a dime.
And then he just turned on a dime and just went the other way. And it's like, oh,
because he was running to the right and then he runs back to the left and then he runs back to the right as they're snapping it. It's just, that's very hard to defend.
Yeah, that I know that play you guys are talking about. The other part about Sarkisian was there was a play where, so early in the game, Browning, Ohio State's linebacker, forced a fumble. Well, a few drives later, they drew up a similar play where they let Browning come clear off the edge, and Jones knew it, and he turned his back. But as soon as Browning was about to, you know, sack him, he threw it right over the top, right where the blitz came from Browning, right to Najee Harris, who made an acrobatic catch. But that was a couple plays that Sarkisian like was masterful.
Yeah,
he was.
And Bama's big three showed up. So let's put some numbers to Devontae Smith. 12 catches, 215 yards, 3 touchdowns in the first half.
Yeah.
He unfortunately got injured right at the beginning of that second half.
Thankfully, it looks,
by the way, played as well.
Not a huge deal.
One crucial catch. Najee Harris, 158 all-purpose yards, 3 touchdowns. He had that catch that you talked about, Trey. He had one play near the goal line where he got just leveled, well, seemingly leveled, but he didn't even move. Didn't get a touchdown there, but still impressive. So he was good. And then Mac Jones, I feel like his performance, if he were any other player on any other team, we'd be talking about this is the greatest performance in championship history. He was 36 of 45, 464 yards, and 5 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Yet he didn't win the MVP of the game. Devontae Smith did, and Devontae Smith deserved it. Well, I mean, either one of them would have been a fine choice, but just crazy.
Somehow, maybe because of that one fumble, like all of a sudden, hurts him. But I mean, he was spectacular. Underappreciated how awesome he was.
How cocky of a move was Devontae Smith rocking the Heisman mask too? That's awesome.
That was awesome. Yeah. Hey, he earned it.
He did.
All right. Let's see. Any other comments from the game? I've got a couple notes here actually from the end of it. So Landon Dickerson, of course, Alabama's injured center, getting in at the end to do a final snap. That was pretty cool. Get a national championship snap. And then Chris Fowler at the final call. Did you notice that, Trey? It looks like you noticed it.
He kind of botched it.
He botched it a little bit, which is just bad timing. So right as Bama does their last kneel down, he says, "In a season of chaos, the Crimson Tide are the conference." I think he meant the constants, but anyway.
Yeah, he
I know a little struggled. Something about messing up, so I should have.
We all struggled. Do.
And like, it really did not matter. It wouldn't have had any impact on the game, but it was interesting when Ryan Day decided to kick a field goal when they were down at like the 4-yard line.
I think it was the 6. Was it not?
Okay. Or? Even if it's the 6, I mean, it's like you get to a point where you're going up against those guys and you can kind of already see how it's going. Like, you need touchdowns. It wouldn't have mattered. It was just a point that I made a note during the game, but no bearing on the result.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, in order to win, you have to be aggressive in every single way. And, you know, I mean, it didn't matter if he did, but I hear you on that.
Okay, well, let's zoom out a little bit, talk about Alabama's place in history. So I'll start with Nick Saban. I just think if he hadn't already, which I think he had, but he has just even more cemented himself as the best coach in college football history. So he's got 7 national championships now. That breaks the tie with Bear Bryant. And he's done it in an era where there's scholarship limits. So theoretically, it should be harder to build a dynasty like this. And he's done it at 2 different schools. Of course, LSU won a championship there. And in the SEC, what has been clearly the best conference overall for the past decade plus. So, I mean, he's the best.
Yeah, there's really not a huge debate anymore, I feel like. I mean, he's the guy. Like,
Yeah.
Maybe three or four years ago, before he got these last two, maybe. But now it's just, nah, it's him. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, moving on to the next one here, is this Alabama's, is this current run that they've been on with Saban, is that like the greatest dynasty that's ever been? I'm going to say yes now. I mean, it's been super impressive. And the main reason is not necessarily just because of their overall record, maybe, but just because they've capitalized and won national titles. You know, some teams have had great runs and they've won a ton of games somewhat comparable to this Alabama run, but they just didn't capitalize with the, like, every other year essentially winning a national title. So, like, you could look at, you know, Tom Osborne's 25-year run at Nebraska. He never had a year where he lost more than three games. So he was constantly there, but he only won three national titles in those 25 years. You know, Saban's doubled that in half the time. So, I mean, it's just not even a comparison. I mean, Tom Osborne was great, but Saban's even better. Bobby Bowden at Florida State had a great run in the late 80s and 90s, but he only won two national titles. Bud Wilkinson's OU's team in the 50s, they were awesome. They only lost like eight games in 11 years, but just three national titles. So, you know, and then you can go back even further to the Newt Rockne and Notre Dame name years. But, you know, it's just, to me, it is. They've had it for what, since 12 years, 13 years now, and just they've been the best team. So it's, I do think this is the greatest run.
I mean, you just look, I go to their football reference page and just look at the losses the last 14 years. It's like one or two or zero every single year. It's insane.
I think he had three one time, maybe. Like,
okay. And obviously the first year was 6-6 or something.
Well, besides the first year,
And there's not many games that are like blowouts. Like, he, say they win the kick six game, they're right there, maybe win another national title. Like, it's amazing how they don't, even when they lose, they don't get demolished. I mean, there's a couple in there, but and then, you know, shifting gears, when you look at Devontae Smith, granted, I mean, he still played 13 games in the end, which is good, but not a true full season nowadays, where some of the guys are playing 14, 15, depending on the circumstances. But like, if you kind of scale his stats, they're just astounding. I mean, that's why we've only seen less than a handful of wide receivers win the Heisman Trophy. And there was really no debate. Like, you could have made a case for the other guys, but no one scoffed at him winning the Heisman. Like, and then what's great about it was he totally validated it in the first half against Ohio State. Like, everyone knew what he was going to do, and he still just did it. And he looks so smooth. Like, for being undersized, he can make great acrobatic sideline catches. He can kind of go over the middle. He can return punts. He's a player that's kind of generational, that he's not just your prototypical like tall wide receiver, throw it up to him, he can go grab it. Like, that's why he's going to be stuck in my memory, just because of how diverse he was and how he used his size actually to his advantage. And he just glides out there. He's so fun to watch. And so historically quick. He's got to be one of the best receivers out there.
Yeah. He's got an argument for, you know, best all time. Yeah. Certainly when you say most accomplished, because his freshman year, he catches the game winning touchdown in the national championship. His last year's junior year, he was in a loaded receiving core with Jerry Jeudy and Henry Ruggs, who got drafted first round. Waddle was there, of course, and he led that unit in receiving yards. And then this year, obviously winning the Heisman, the Biletnikoff national championship, MVP in the championship. Hard to beat that in terms of accomplishment.
Yeah.
Okay. How about, I'm going to go to Mac Jones. Where does he stand in history? And I'll just say, statistically, it's the most efficient passing season in college football history. 77.4% completions. That's better than Joe Burrow last year. 11.2 yards per attempt, also better. He had a lower interception percentage. His pass efficiency rating of 203.1, the best in college football history. His QBR on ESPN, highest that they've ever recorded. So just statistically, that the passing efficiency is incredible. I'm not saying he's the best quarterback or even that this was the best season a quarterback's had. I would say neither of those things are true. You got to adjust for the talents around him, the offensive line, receiving core he has, and just the fact that he doesn't add anything in the running game. But the stats themselves are crazy.
Unbelievable. It's crazy just how, after Joe Burrow, you know, just the very next year. We like Joe Burrow. I mean, he easily won the Heisman last year. It was just a no brainer, and stats were just through the roof. It's like, oh my gosh, this is insane. And then Mac just like one ups it almost essentially. Yet he doesn't win the Heisman, but I mean, wow, it was crazy.
Yeah, I looked at the top five list of the top five seasons in terms of pass efficiency rating. Number one on the list, like I just said, is Mac Jones. Number two is last year, Joe Burrow. And then number three, two of them, Trey, do you have it?
No, I think it's 5 years in a row. It's been broken 5 years in a row.
There you go. That's, yeah. It's just every year someone breaks it.
Like, ooh, it had gone for a while. Next year. But it, yeah, I know. It 5 years in a row, the greatest pass efficiency. It's amazing.
I'm going to say that ends next year.
Baker and yeah, Tyler. It's hard to be.
Who knows? Who knows?
I mean, who's going to do it? Rattler? Rattler could have a pretty darn good one.
Bryce Young.
Bryce Young, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Uyunglele.
It's just, yeah. It's just amazing. This era.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Okay. So how about the 2020 Alabama team, just the whole team? Are they in the discussion for best ever, Ryan?
I don't think so. I mean, you could, okay, in the discussion, maybe, but like, are they legitimately? No, they're not. I probably wouldn't even put them in my top 10.
Whoa, you know, top 10.
Right around that spot. Just all right, because name of, all 10. You know, name if, all 10. Yeah, I know, exactly. If you look at their whole body of work, I mean, yeah, if you look at the playoff, they were dominant, of course, no doubt about it. They kicked butt. But look at the whole rest of the season. They almost lost to Ole Miss. That was just a game that was back and forth the whole way. It was neck and neck the entire way. Don't shake your head at me. That was neck and neck the entire
way. I'm
not
shaking my head. Come on. I'm just listening.
They gave up like 48 points. And
tilted my head like, okay, that's a good point. All right, I'm listening. Yeah.
And then when you go to the Georgia game, yes, they ended up winning by, I think it was 17. Mike's shaking his head now. Georgia game, they were losing in the second half, right? And they needed a little bit of a late comeback. I know they ended up winning semi-comfortably, of course, but that was with Stetson Bennett as Georgia's quarterback, who, let's just say, is not a stellar quarterback. And then, of course, in the SEC title game versus Florida, team that lost four games, they only beat them by five, and Florida had the ball last. If they had like 30 more seconds, maybe that game was a little different. So I just don't think with those few kind of games, there's some weaknesses that you can point to. When you're talking about greatest teams of all time, what weaknesses can you point to? They have a few as far as games that they've played. There's some teams that maybe only have one, some like maybe, I mean, of course, 95 Nebraska is the team that really just has, I had to put that in there. It's the only team that really has zero. They beat everybody by 14 or more. It was just dominated everybody. And they beat the number two team by like 38. But they're really, really good. No, but I just can't put them like at the top-ish, just not quite there.
I mean, for me, they're definitely in the discussion. At the moment, this offense, I think, is the best ever, might be better than LSU's the last year. For me, when I answer these questions, especially right now, as we just kind of talked about, I need more time to digest it and kind of gain perspective. Like with same with the way when we answered this question for LSU at this time last year, you know, I want to go ahead 5 years and kind of reflect back and see again, because like we talked about with the quarterback efficiency, it's like every year there's a new standard bearer. And so, you know, overall, some of the metrics would point to this team being near the top. What they just did to a really good Ohio State team is crazy. They won 11 games in the SEC, which is great. I'd argue that this wasn't one of their traditionally dominant SEC years as years passed. So, you know, that may be a slight knock, but they were still pretty dominant. Their scoring differential was an average of 29 points. If you look at the last 25 national champs, that's ninth. So, you know, there was still some room there. But, you know, you factor in COVID, what they overcame there, that's a feather in their cap. I just want to avoid some recency bias, long answer, and kind of
I like that stat you just said, perspective. There, points per game differential. You know, that was
pretty good. I mean, maybe if you got to add maybe one.
Yeah.
If you had or two cupcakes, it wouldn't have gone up that much more.
Yeah. Could have bumped them up a few spots.
Yeah. Yeah, short answer. I think they should be in the discussion. I wouldn't have them number one, but you go 13-0 against an all power five schedule. You win every single game but one by double digits, at least double digits, as we like to say.
Nice.
But I know a couple of those double digit wins maybe at one point were close, but still, that's ultimately, it's hard to, you know, they're in the discussion, in my opinion.
Yeah. Fair enough.
All right, let's. It's which is such an easy thing to say. We can discuss it.
Yeah, like, I mean, like, you know,
we can discuss 20 teams.
Are they in the discussion? Compare them to 95 Nebraska. Are they in the discussion there?
I don't know. It's when I look at the greatest team ever, the first thing I'm looking at is like, did you kill everyone?
Yeah,
and exactly. So that's why, like, last year with LSU, I mean, their resume is impressive in terms of like the ranked teams they beat and those last three games. But then you look at, and we're getting off topic here, but you look at earlier in the season, you know, they won by 7 against Texas. They had, I think they won by 3 against Auburn. They had some close games in there. So I also feel like that's a knock.
I also like to look like their offense was off the charts good, but Bama's defense was like, it was semi-vulnerable. Like, it wasn't, you wouldn't say that is like the number one or number two defense in the country. It was, exactly. I mean, it was legit, of course, it won the national title, but it wasn't like, they didn't have two number one units. Not that should exactly. be the only criteria. Yeah.
That front seven was not like some of the great Alabama front sevens of 5-6 years ago. Okay.
Yep.
Let's move away from the national championship. Congrats to Bama. You guys really could use a break. So
yeah. Tide.
Share a little bit.
Coaching carousel. We got Jim Harbaugh receiving a new 5-year contract at Michigan. He's going to get $4 million per year plus incentives. So that is up to a 50% pay cut. And the buyout is only going to be $4 million next year, and it's going to go down every year after that. Trey, what are your thoughts on this deal?
Makes sense for both sides. You know, like you just mentioned, it gives Michigan the opportunity to fire him without a massive dent to the bank account if need Nothing. Be at the end of next million? Year. And, you know, it's even though it's kind of silly, they need this length of a contract for recruits. Like I said, I think it's silly just because, you know, recruits should realize that he's on the hot seat regardless of how many years he has on his contract. But it's also really good for Michigan in the sense because if he does turn it around, this is a bargain for what Harbaugh would be on an open market.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think you put it well. I think it's if you weren't going to fire him, which I personally didn't think they should. I would understand if they did, but you know, they were winning 9-10 games pretty much every year but before, and this year you had a down year, but I think it's worth one more shot next year. See if he can get it turned back around. And it's not you didn't put yourself in any worse situation, because next year if he sucks and you want to fire him, it's either way, it's going to cost you $8 million, because if you just kept his current deal, he had 1 year left for $8 million next year. All right, then he would have played that out and you would have paid him $8 million and he's gone. Well, now he's getting a $4 million per year contract and the buyout's $4 million. So it's you're no worse off here.
Yeah, no, I mean, it makes sense for Michigan here. There's really not a whole lot of downside other than maybe for fans that just are impatient and just want to move on and gain excitement from having a new coach. You know, business wise and potentially football wise, I mean, it could be good. Like, we've all on this podcast been Harbaugh fans, and just one kind of down year doesn't necessarily mean you're done. We've seen he can come back. They're still going to have a lot of talent, and we'll see how they can progress. But you know, I think it makes sense, and it's just kind of makes it the divorce a little easier here in the future if it does happen.
Yeah, if the buyout were big on this contract, I think we'd all be saying, "What are you doing?" But it's not.
Yep. Yep.
All right.
And maybe they put feelers out who they wanted to be a head coach. Maybe they were like, hey, there's just, and they didn't get maybe the reception that they wanted or something. There's like, hey, well, we might as well stick with what we got for now. I don't know. It's just a thought.
Yeah, could be. All right. Moving on to Andy Avalos, Oregon's defensive coordinator. He's going back to Boise State to replace Brian Harsin as their next head coach. What do you think here, Ryan?
Yeah, I think this is good. It's a perfect fit, seems like. I mean, of course, he was a star linebacker for them in the early 2000s. He coached there for several years, and he did well at Oregon as the Oregon defense coordinator the last couple of years, kind of upped the profile of that defense, especially in 2019. They were ninth in the country in scoring defense, so that's saying something when you're in the Pac-12 and Oregon, not necessarily known for a dominant D. So he did some remarkable stuff there. And I know this year they kind of slipped. I think they were, you know, averaged around 28 they gave up, but they had some crazy opt-outs, and we all kind of know how that affected them, probably really a lot. And they, of course, with COVID and stuff, it was just so weird. But I think it's a good hire. I mean, he knows Boise. He knows how it works. He's going to know how to recruit there. He's going to know what to expect. So I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I know. Excuse me. I know some people wanted Kellen Moore, but I like Avalos here. Been a coach. He's been a coach longer. He knows the Boise program well, and he's known to be good in recruiting. He helped land some of those guys that they just landed in some good classes at Oregon. I'd be happy if I was a Boise fan, getting some youthful energy, get back to a New Year's Six bowl. I think I'd be happy.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like this is unanimously seen as a good hire. Like
Kellen Moore would have been exciting too, no doubt about it. And I would have been pumped if I was a Boise fan. We got Kellen Moore, but I don't think there was a wrong choice between these guys here. They had some good options.
Agreed. There's a lot of other news out there: transfers, NFL draft declarations, some coordinator hires, flooding in the last few days. We're going to save that for an off season episode. We got a long off season to go, so we'll go over all those maybe in a few weeks here. But that'll do it.
Fall some more.
Yeah, exactly. See what happens at Tennessee. Are they going to keep Jeremy Pruitt? I don't know.
Got me, dude.
Come on, Ryan. Put your cap on and report
the czar.
Yeah. Put my Sir Yacht cap on.
Yeah, we know one of us needs to just become Sir Yacht this off season. Well, right now, why don't we just say sources are saying that?
Yeah, sources are telling me you're full of crap.
He's gonna be fired, and there's already a deal in place with Hugh Freeze.
Yeah.
So there you go. If we tweet that, we're gonna get so much attention. We need to do this.
Let's do it.
All right. Well, that'll do it for the College Football Bros podcast. Be sure to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. We're going to be doing our Golden Bros episode next week. So we're going to list all the, give our awards for all the top performers of 2020. We think we're going to do a vote for the listeners as well. We're going to have a fourth Bros vote. So be on the lookout on our Twitter. If I can figure it out, maybe we'll post a Google Forms link for you guys to vote and have a say in the Golden Bros, which is better than the Home Depot Awards, in my opinion.
Clearly.
Again, subscribe on Patreon as well. Like I said, we're giving our thoughts on 2021 in our latest episode, and we will talk to you next week.
Roll Tide.
Roll Tide.
You've been listening to the College Football Bros. If you have any questions for the next podcast, email them to collegefootballbros@gmail.com. To keep up with the brothers on social media, like them on Facebook at College Football Bros, follow them on Instagram at College Football Bros, and for their commentary on Saturdays, follow them on Twitter at CFB Bros. Thanks for listening.